Good morning, everyone. I call this hearing of the House Veterans Military Affairs Division for April 2nd, 2025 to order. I see that we have a quorum present, so we will get started. We have a full agenda today, and just want to remind everyone to have a respectful dialogue as expected, the quorum in this committee. And so we'll start off with a Pledge of Allegiance. Vice Chair Hemison Yeager, can you start, lead us, please? Okay, the first bill on our, the first item on our agenda is approval of the minutes. Chair Bliss, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
I have, Mr. Chair, and I'd move for their approval.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The minutes are approved. First bill on the agenda is Representative Gottfried, House File 3005, the Metro Meals on Wheels bill. I will move that the bill be laid over for possible inclusion. Welcome to the committee, Representative Godfrey, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Zhang. And I will note that there are donuts being passed around as this is my first bill hearing. Please note for the record that I did wheel them in today, so it is a meal on wheels. I will keep this brief. House 3005 is a short bill with a big impact on our Minnesota veterans. It seeks to continue funding for the veteran-specific program within Metro Meals on Wheels, which is administered through Minnesota Veterans Affairs. This service delivers nutritious meals from a varied menu to almost 200 vulnerable veterans on a daily basis. Furthermore, each meal is tailored to the dietary needs of each veteran recipient, whether they are diabetic or dealing with a heart disease or anything that might require some specific nutrition. Continued funding right now is more crucial now than ever before, as the federal government has reduced funding for senior nutrition coming into this state, which has resulted in a 12% cut from last year for Metro Meals on Wheels, which has in turn strained their ability to provide service to everyone who needs it. So to help with this, I'm asking that $995,540 be appropriated in the 2026-2027 biennium from the veterans budget to so that we can continue providing this critical service to our vulnerable veterans. This program, I want to say, is highly targeted, accountable, and transparent. Recipients of this program must demonstrate food insecurity, be age 60 or older, or have health conditions that hinder independent food access. Most frequently, recipients of this program are referred to it by social workers at VA hospitals, county veteran service offices, or the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans. And then finally, each recipient must be individually approved by MNVA after a thorough application. So with over 90% of the appropriated funds going directly to meals provided to our vulnerable veterans, please know that this appropriation will go to those veterans who need it most. So with that being said, I want to turn it over to those who can probably speak best on behalf of the program. We have Executive Director of Metro Meals on Wheels, Pat Rowan, and Veteran Program recipient, Carter Drake. Thank you. Why don't you all come up to the testifying table.
Good morning and welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, and you may proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Pat Rowan. I'm the Executive Director of Metro Meals on Wheels. Meals on Wheels has been in the community for over 50 years, providing ready-to-eat nutritious meals for our aging neighbors. And it's truly is a neighbors helping neighbors program. We have volunteers serving meals to their neighbors, and we wouldn't survive without the support of individual donations, so folks stepping up to help those most vulnerable in the community. I had the pleasure to speak to this committee in 2023, and you were thoughtful enough to fund a pilot project to serve meals to veterans in particular in the Twin Cities area, and we come to you today in order to continue that program. In the year and a half that since launch, we've served over 28,000 meals to 100 and currently serve 182 individuals a day. We're looking not only to continue that for the next 2 years, but because it was a pilot project, you'll be hearing from Lutheran Social Services today that wants to expand that program statewide. So we strongly support that effort as well. Meals on Wheels is important to aging veterans, many of whom face unique challenges as they grow older. Many of them live on fixed incomes and relying on Social Security and pensions solely for their income. For veterans who may not have family nearby or have the ability to prepare their own meals for themselves due to physical or mental issues, Meals on Wheels provides a vital service and a connection to the community. In addition to the physical benefits of Meals on Wheels, the relief of social isolation and knowing that there's others in the community that care for them is critically important for their mental well-being. I do want to mention that over 45% of the people that we serve through Meals on Wheels indicate that their Meals on Wheels volunteer is the only person that they see in a given day. By passing House File 3005, this committee will provide the resources to continue serving veterans in need at our current level for the next 2 years. We understand that you have to make tough decisions over the next several weeks, but I urge you to think of our older adults who have served, who are now facing the challenge of increased costs for housing, health care, and food. Please help make sure that they get at least one complete meal and a visit from a friendly volunteer each day. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Rowan. Next testifier, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Carter Drake, and I'm a veteran, and I served 1969 to 1970 in Vietnam. So I started Meals on Wheels in August of this year, and it's been a blessing for me. The meals are nutritious. It's given my life, since I've been retired, it's given my life some structure as far as I expect my meals at between 11 and 11:30. And, you know, it just kind of makes my day. I believe that the meals are, my wife always says my meals, you know, kind of put a smile on my face and kind of help me through the day. So I just like the Meals on Wheels. I believe it's been a blessing for me personally. And, you know, I'm just here to hope that it continues. That's pretty much all I have.
Thank you for testimony. Member.
Thank you for testifying. Next is we have member questions. The first question is from Vice Chair Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for this, for the bill, and congratulations and welcome to the Veterans Committee on your first bill hearing. 2 years ago, I had the same question to you, I believe, sir, and that was, how are we proving that, because it's my understanding that Meals on Wheels provides meals to any individual who is of an income or an age bracket. How are we proving that this money that is going for veterans is not offsetting the money that you would currently use to serve veterans? Because if I am a 65-year-old former vet, you know, no one's a former veteran, but if I was a 65-year-old veteran and I apply and I don't check the block that says I'm a veteran, you're still probably, if you have the assets, going to provide me that meal. Now, how are we ensuring that this is not being offset and saying, well, we were only going to, you know, we're serving every veteran we can find, and we're going to take it from this pot. We're supplanting it so then we can feed other individuals. This is the veterans division here. Our job is to serve veterans in this committee, and that's why you're here, to serve veterans. And I want to make sure that this money doesn't just offset and say, well, now, great, we got all of our veteran food. We're good. We're going to go and deal with other things, because that, in my opinion, that goes to a different committee.
Mr. Rowan?
Thank you, Chair. Representative Olson, thank you for that question. We have seen a 60% increase in demand since the beginning of the pandemic, and we are continuing to see, as a matter of fact, this week we've already had 7 requests from veterans for Meals on Wheels. Unfortunately, for the first time ever, as the baby boomer generation ages, we are seeing wait lists for Meals on Wheels. So we have funding constraints in all of our programs, and so by granting these funds for veterans, we've been able to expand those services and serve more people than we have before. And it's part of our contract with the VA that this pot is the last resort. If they're eligible for other funds, they are restricted from being on this program.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that. That last bit right there means a lot to me, that the fact that this money is the last money that you use to, you know, if they qualify for anything else, we use that first, and then that veteran aspect is secondary. So I really appreciate hearing that. Thank you.
Representative Feist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much, Representative Gottfried, for bringing this bill. And this program is just really amazing. And I just wanted to highlight the information that we were provided, that it's like, and as our testifier described, like, it's not just about the food. It's about making connections. It's about connecting veterans to services, about recruiting volunteers. I'm glad to see that you work with the VA on their suicide prevention program. Just the whole kind of constellation of services that Meals on Wheels provides to veterans is really important, and I just wanted to lift that up and thank you for the work you do, and thank you, sir, for your service. Thanks.
Representative Hemison, Vice Chair Hemison-Yeager.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for bringing this bill. You know, I also serve on the Children and Families Committee, where we've also been talking about food insecurity. And we've been talking about it in kind of an ecosystem way with food shelves, food banks. And I think Meals on Wheels plays a very important part of that, because we're seeing federal cuts. The USDA just cut truckfuls of food coming into Minnesota. So anything we can do to kind of put this puzzle together to help feed our people, especially, you know, our vulnerable, our veterans, our senior citizens, I think is imperative that we do. So thank you for bringing this.
Any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, Representative Gottfried, final remarks.
Yes, thank you, Chair. And thank you to members of the committee for being here today and hearing House File 3005. I do just want to highlight again, there is growing demand for this program amongst the veteran community. And again, in a time where we are seeing some financial cuts from the federal government, we as a state really need to make sure that we are supporting our veterans in our state. So just would encourage support for House File 3005 and hope that it can be incorporated into a larger bill within the committee here at some point. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Gottfried. I will renew my motion. The House File 3005 be laid over. Next on the agenda is House File 2773. Representative Clardy.
Huh?
This bill was discussed informationally last week, and we will just spend a few minutes on the author's amendment testimony, so I will move that House File 2773 be in front of the committee. Welcome to the committee, Representative Clardy, to your bill on your A1 author's amendment.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, committee. Really excited about this bill. We had a brief preview last week. So the purpose of this is dedicated to making sure that our greater Minnesota veterans are able to get services like Meals on Wheels, and the appropriation would be for $500,000, and I'm going to turn it back to you, Chair, so you can call my testifiers.
Any further discussion on the A1 amendment? Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Clardy, your bill just gets better and better with this amendment, so thank you for that.
All right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Next, so to your bill as amended, Representative Clardy. You have testifiers, so Amy Vagert, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair and committee members. I am Amy Vagert. I'm the Senior Director of Meals at Lutheran Social Service of Minnesota, and LSS partners with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs to support veterans and their families through the CORE program, including providing nutritious meals. LSS has been serving Minnesotans since 1973, and we provide meal options through congregate dining, home-delivered meals, frozen-shipped meals, and contracted meals with youth and daycare programs. In 2024, we served over 1.5 million meals to adults and youth in need throughout the state. These meals helped individuals and families stay healthy and live in their home communities independently. LSS Meals started providing meals for CORE clients in April of 2024. Since then, we've provided 5,811 meals to veterans and their families. These meals reached 259 families, feeding 334 individuals throughout the state in 23 cities, including Virginia, Duluth, Detroit Lakes, Brainerd, Hibbing, and Amboy. The CORE clients consistently expressed their gratitude and appreciation for the meals that they received. One team member shared that their CORE client is the main caregiver for their spouse, and being able to receive these excellent quality meals allowed them time to focus on the other care needs of their loved one. Clients have also shared that they may not historically have been the main meal preparer in their household and don't necessarily have all the skills needed to prepare meals. So the meals have been a huge help in a time when caring for their loved one was their main priority. We know there is a high need as we continue to see food insecurity on intake forms of the clients that we serve. We have the infrastructure and capacity to meet the needs of the individuals. The meal team located in Eagle Bend at Hilltop Regional Kitchen just expanded storage capacity for frozen meal storage. And with the additional funding, this team would be able to sustain year-round support for meals to veterans and their families above our historical meal rates and individuals served. In conclusion, LSS is grateful for the opportunity to support veterans and their families through a wide range of high-quality supportive services, and we support funding to the CORE program as proposed in House File 2773 to help more Minnesotans access these services. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussions on the bill? Seeing none, any closing remarks, Representative Clardy?
Thanks for the support, and it's just really interesting and important how everyone understands how the veterans have given so much, and it's just time to support them. Thank you.
I will renew my motion that House File 2773 as amended be laid over. Thank you, Representative Clardy. Next is House File 982, another Representative Clardy bill. I will move that House File 982 be in front of the committee. I understand that you have a DE2 author's amendment, so if you could move and explain your amendment, Representative Clardy.
So moved.
Okay, all those in favor of the author's amendment, say aye. Opposed? Motion carries. To your bill, Representative Clardy, as amended.
First of all, I'm really excited that my testifier is here, who you'll get to soon, but he brought this to me. He is one of my constituents and also a veteran that's 100% disabled, and so therefore he saw the benefit in this. So this bill is to provide access to financial aid for veterans, family members that are 100% disabled. And this also will be as the last resort. So that means that they've already filled out their FAFSA form, they've already looked at their military benefits, they've already looked at everything else encompassing. So it's very last resort. And then what else do I need to ask? And it is right now for the state-operated institutions. And I think that's about it. Chair?
I see you have a testifier. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, and you may proceed.
Yeah, my name is Alan Garski. Good morning. Thank you for letting me come to testify. Like Representative Clarney says, I am 100% disabled American veteran. I am married, have four children, and with that, you know, I only get so much money per year through through the VA plus my retirement because I am 20-year veteran, United States Navy. This is a good program. This is probably well overdue. Excuse me. And as I like to see this as a standalone bill. Than otherwise that, but that's just my opinion on this. And let's see what else I got here. And I need you support, like other veterans, and as 100% disabled, I'd like as a pot of like 250,000 veterans, you bring that down to about 10%. Out of that 10%, there might be 2% that would be qualified for this program. That are school-age children that are getting ready to go into college. So I would like to see this passed. I do appreciate it, and I want to also mention that there is a House bill on this 1074 that Matt Klein, my other representative, has put in, and it has passed through their things for the final vote. Along with House File 982 that Representative Clarney has put in. I want to know that I have met with some of you or talked by via phone or via Zoom, and I appreciate the time. All I ask is please bring this bill forth through the committee here. Thank and that's you, all Ms. I have. Any questions? God bless. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Grasky. Member of this discussion, Vice Chair Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When we had our conversation previously, we talked about age limits on the dependents. I'm looking in the bill here, and I'm not seeing a definition of a dependent based on what their age is. So it just says a dependent, natural, or adopted child or stepchild of a veteran. And then it says, as defined in section 197.447, which is actually the definition of a veteran, not the definition of the dependent that we're talking about. Is there any definition of a dependent child of an individual for, say, like, they can still be on your health insurance, so 26, or they're on your taxes? Because I'm in favor of this concept. I'm not in favor of a 42-year-old dependent of a veteran getting a bachelor's degree. I don't think that a 42-year-old should be taking advantage of educational benefits from their disabled parent. Is there anything in the bill that defines that better?
Mr. Grasky or Representative Clardy?
Chair, thank you, and thank you for the question, Representative Olson, Vice Chair Olson. As you know, the bill's still evolving. I think that's a very good point, something that was an oversight. We will define that for that.
Thank you. Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that's great. I think that if we can narrow the scope of it and ensure that those who are the actual dependents of disabled veterans receive these benefits, it'd be great.
Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, I will renew my motion to House File 92 as amended be laid over. Next is House File 1845. Representative Cha, is he here? I'll move the House File 1845 be in front of the committee. Representative Cha, it's my understanding that you have an author's amendment to A4.
I do, Chair.
So I will move the A4 amendment. So if you can explain your amendment, Representative Cha.
Thank you.
If you can explain your offer. Yes. Amendment.
Explain my amendment or?
Yes.
Yes. The amendment is to narrow the scope of the benefits defined under veteran benefits
to bring down the fiscal note of the costs of these benefits. Thank you.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. I also see that we have a DE1 amendment from Chair Bliss. Okay. All right. Explain your bill, and we will go through the DE amendment. Representative Chalk.
To my bill?
Yes.
Thank you, Chair.
As amended.
Thank you, Chair Bliss and Chair Co-Chair Shong. I come to you before today not only as State Representative Cha, but as a refugee from the secret war of Laos and the son of an SGU soldier who served in the secret war of Laos from 1961 to 1975. Sorry, it's a bit emotional thinking about my father who is not with me today. To understand the special designation of the SGU American soldiers, you have to understand the importance of their role, involvement in the Vietnam-era conflicts in Laos, known as the Secret War of Laos. The Geneva Accord declared Laos as a free and natural state, neutral state, which meant American armed forces could not occupy Laos to fend off the communist advancement in Southeast Asia. This led to the recruitment of non-citizen Laos hill tribe groups, such as the Hmong in Laos. Over 30,000 young Hmong men died serving to protect American interests and Lima sites, which hosted radars and airfields. You may have heard of Air America and the Ravens. These were U.S. Air Force pilots, known also as forward air controllers. Many SGU soldiers died rescuing down American pilots that were shot down. It is known to be fact that for every pilot that was shot down, 100 Hmong soldiers died rescuing that American downed pilot. So many men died in this war that child soldiers were recruited. And if I may ask Mr. Sainu to stand up, as he was 13 years old when he was recruited, if he is here today. Sainu Shag. And he was 14, that gentleman right there. At the end of the war, there were 728 dead Americans unclassified in Laos, over 30,000 dead Hmong soldiers, and many that were not accounted for. Hundreds and thousands of refugees had to be resettled. Now, of those 100,000 Hmong Americans in Minnesota, 100% of us are here because of that war. And of the 9 state legislator that is here at the Capitol, 5 of us are refugees, where the other 4 are first generation from refugee families. This bill is to restore the honor and the dignities of these heroes and of this community that has given so much, not only to the state of Minnesota, but to the United States of America. To honor them is to bring them from the shadow into the light, to give them self-dignity, pride for those that are left. And there are less than a couple hundred when there was thousands. I am going to yield the rest of my time to Representative Hurd. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, Chair Hurd. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Zhang and Chair Bliss. My name is Kali Hur. I'm state representative here as well. And thank you for giving me a couple of minutes to speak. I think that the bulk of today's time will be best served hearing from our testifiers. I will just say real quick that I wanted to first say thank you to all of the members who signed on to this bill. This has been an extremely bipartisan bill, and I appreciate that as people signed on, they signed on to the spirit of the bill. And Chair Bliss and I thank you so much for having an opportunity to have a conversation with us. I want this committee to know that we are committed to continue to work on this language. I just wanted to address a couple of really quick things for this committee around some of the issues that have been brought up about this particular bill. And what I do want to start with is that we have a meeting with the deputy commissioner that should be coming up to work out the language. We already narrowed the scope of the bill from originally impacting the approximately 900 soldiers, but also their spouses and their dependents. We've actually, because this is just our objective is to honor the SGU veterans, we were able to bring down that fiscal note to something that the department could absorb, which meant that it is just recognition, as you see here in the A4 amendment, which should have limited costs, and it no longer includes any benefits to the dependents or to spouses of the SGU veterans. And also, I know that Chair Bliss will be talking to the DE, but there are components of that are actually really good, and that we will be working with the department on incorporating some of those pieces into it. And we just do ask that that our committee members and our body here have patience as we work through this, because this is a critical issue. This is the 50th year of the Hmong resettlement here in Minnesota, and so we want to get this right. And what we rarely, I think that a lot of times there's argument as to who should have honors and who should not. And I just want to reiterate for this committee that the Hmong are special, and not just because I am Hmong, but because of the fact of that they were recruited specifically to fight on behalf of the United States. There are many allies of wars that America has engaged in, and those allies are often fighting for their own country. So when the Lao were recruited, they were fighting for their country, which is Laos. When we are in Afghanistan, the soldiers who were, the resistance fighters there were fighting for their country. The Hmong did not have a country. We were specifically recruited to fight this war on behalf of the United States. I have asked the department to look through the history of America to find out if there's ever been any other group that has been specifically recruited to fight on behalf of America. And I am still awaiting that information, but from what we understand, and you'll hear from Director Lee Ba-Xiong today, that the Hmong situation is very unique, which is why we are asking for this particular designation. And so we ask that just you listen to the testimony today and keep an open mind and open heart. We appreciate all of the support that we've received thus far. And so I will yield the rest of the time to our members. Thank you, Chair Zhang.
Thank you, Chair Her. Your first testifier is Dr. Lee Ba-Xiong from the Center for Hmong Studies. You want to do it here, you want me to testify? Okay. Yeah. Welcome to committee, Dr. Lee Ba-Xiong. Please state your name for the record, and you may proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Lee Ba-Xiong, and I am the director of the Center for Hmong Studies at Concordia University, St. Paul. I'm also the co-chair of the Hmong Committee 100, a 501c4 organization which advances bill working with the veterans. Thank you for hearing this bill. I stand before you as a son of a Hmong Special Guerrilla Unit, or known as SGU veterans. My father, like many others, was recruited when he was only 17 years of age to fight in a war not his own. Years before, his older brother, a member of the legendary Battalion 1, had answered the call only to perish in defense of Americans' interests in Laos. His wife and two children also died from chemical used by the communists to poison the water. My father's story is one of extraordinary sacrifices. He was sent twice to Thailand for specialized training, becoming a master of paratrooping and heavy artillery, wielding weapons like the 105 and 155 howitzer. He fought in almost every major battles, from the Hai Thapu Pati, a U.S. Air Force radar installation in northern part of Laos, which got overrun by Vietnamese commandos in 1968, to the Valley of Long Chang, the CIA and General Pao's headquarters in Laos. At Bolong or Lima Site 32, the thunder of his gun silenced his ear, a permanent scar to his service. Today, he battles skin cancer, a cruel reminder of the gunpowder that saturated his body. Next month, he faces his fifth surgery to remove more cancer mold. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my father is here in the audience, along with a few of the remaining SEU. I'd like them to stand up. Okay, let us be clear about the context of my father and the SEU's sacrifices. The Geneva Conference. Okay, sorry. Let's be clear about the context of my father and the SEU's sacrifices. The Geneva Accord of 1954, 61, and 62 meant to ensure Laos neutrality. But the United States and North Vietnam, driven by Cold War strategy, bypassed these agreements, choosing to wage a war through the Hmong and other Lao SEUs. They were recruited, funded, trained, and paid directly by the CIA to serve as surrogate soldiers of the United States Armed Forces in Laos, paying unimaginable prices. Over 30,000 Hmong SEU died in the war, and another 50,000 perished fleeing persecution by the communists after 1975. CIA Director William Colby acknowledged the debt owed. Without the Hmong, quotes, 50,000 more American names might grace the Vietnam Memorial Wall in Washington, D.C. From 1962 to 1975, these Hmong soldiers held back 70,000 North Vietnamese troops, preventing them from overwhelming American forces in South Vietnam. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, fewer than 1,000 of these heroes remain in Minnesota. Their numbers are dwindling, their stories fading. We have a moral obligation to honor these services, to acknowledge the sacrifices they made for a country that was not their own. I implore you, please support this bill, and let's not allow these aging Hmong and Lao SEU veterans' legacy to be forgotten. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Lee Paul-Seung. Next is Mr. Ya Lee. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, and you may proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the Veterans Affairs Committees. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Ya Lee, Y-A-L-E-E. I was one of the 37 Hmong pilots trained by the United States Air Force with the full support of the Air Central Intelligence Agency during the Secret War in Laos. We flew T-28 Trojans, the World War II era fighter plane, conducting numerous bombing missions as part of a Hmong Special Guerrilla Unit to combat the Pathet Lao and the North Vietnamese forces. Why I'm here? To show you who I work for. I'm wearing 1972 flying suit I brought from Laos with me. On my right, you can see the emblem, Date 1, 56 Special Operation Wing, which was an American unit stationed in Udon Thani in Thailand. I brought a photo of my Air Force American instructor pilot and me. I brought a certificate of U.S. flying certificate. It was a U.S. Air Force Lieutenant Colonel John Anderson. I also brought my certificate, personally signed and presented to me by U.S. Air Force Chief of Staff, General Norton Schwartz from Pentagon, Washington, D.C. Additionally, Hmong history pilots is honored in the National Museum in the U.S. Air Force in Dayton, Ohio. I'm here to testify to, in strong support, the SGU Bill, House File 1845, a bill that seeks to formally recognize the service and sacrifice of Hmong veterans. Under the code name Water Pump, the Hmong people pay heavy price for our role on the ground and in the air to support U.S. military operation in Southeast Asia. Many Hmong soldiers and pilots perished during this war. And the worst part was when the U.S. withdrew from the Vietnam War. In that aftermath, the war didn't end for the Hmong people because the communist forces relentless hunted, tortured, and killed Hmong people. Many SGU who are sought refuge in the U.S. are blacklisted to enter our home countries. Hmong face this issue because of Hmong loyalty, and in the past services to America. Despite our vital contribution, we Hmong veterans have never been granted a full recognition we deserve. We carry not only the scar of battle, but the burden of being forgotten. Even Laos and Thailand, Hmong people, stateless people. Today, you have the power to change the bill into law, into policy. Passing this bill, it is not just a symbolic act. It is a profound acknowledgement of our place in U.S. history. It sends a clear message that these are those who fight for this nation, including our children and your children, will never be overlooked. This bill is a crucial step toward justice and a meaningful way to educate the future generation about the sacrifices made to secure our nation's freedom. The tip of your pen, Madam and Sir, can change the life of a Hmong veteran for a lifetime. Especially 50 years anniversary is coming up since we depart from Laos. Thank you for your time and consideration, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Next is Ban Sanvang. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record and you may proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Co-Chair Bridge, Co-Chair Sean, member of the hearing committee. My name is former Lieutenant Sang Wang. I served in the CIA recruit foot soldier in the Secret War from 1969 to 1975. Currently, I am the executive director of the Special Guerrilla Unit, Veteran and Family of USA organization. I am here today to provide brief overview of the military structure of the Secret War in Laos, which was critical part of the Vietnam War. During the war, the SU were recruited and operate under the CIA guidance and were stationed throughout different military regions in Laos. The CIA organized our SU force into group mobile, GM, units. Each consists of approximately 2,500 to 3,000 military personnel. Each GM unit worked closely with the CIA case officer and an interpreter. Each GM unit worker daily coordinate and get intelligence. We play a crucial role in collecting enemy's movement report, field intelligence and casualty members, which were then relayed to our superiors officers. High-ranking CIA officer frequently visited our units, inspect military operation alongside General Wang Pao. When the Secret War ended in 1975, the Communist North Vietnamese Army and Pathet Lao soldier targeted and persecuted former HU soldier like myself. Facing imminent danger, I had no choice but to flee my homeland and seek refuge in the United States. In 2000, Congress recognized our contribution by passing H.R. 371, the Hmong Naturalization Act, which provides an expedited path to U.S. citizenship for HU veterans and their spouse. Additionally, our service was acknowledged through a memorial plaque and a dedicated tree in Arlington National Cemetery. In 2018, President Trump further honored our sacrifice by signing a legislation granting burial right for the Hmong SU veteran in U.S. national cemeteries. Today, I stand before you to request your support and approval of HF 1845. This bill is deeply personal to our surviving SU veteran and their spouse. We fought alongside the United States because we believe in its mission to defend freedom, democracy in Laos and surrounding the country in Southeast Asia. I urge you to recognize our service and honor our sacrifice by voting yes on this bill. Thank you very much. My bio and the full report is on the white pamphlet that my wife distributed. I do not know that it's enough for you. If someone needs to have one, we, the HU, is be glad to provide you a copy that written by Jim W. Lair and General Wang Pao. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next is the Honorable Colonel Yi Hang. Welcome to committee. Colonel, please state your name for the record, and you may proceed. Welcome to the committee, Colonel.
Good morning. My name is Yi Hang. Committee co-chair is Bliss, co-chair Xiong, distinguished members of the Veterans and Military Affairs Division Committee. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to share our story. Also, thank you for all you do to support our veterans. And to all the veterans here and online, thank you for your service. My name is Yi Hang. I am American and a proud graduate of West Point and a retired U.S. Army colonel. But above all, I am the son of a Hmong Special Guerrilla Unit soldier, Major Vang Chu Hung. Today, I am honored and privileged to wear this uniform once again, to honor the sacrifices of my father and the countless brave men who stood alongside him. Please note for the record that my testimony does not reflect the official stance of the United States Army or the U.S. government. This bill before you is a hard ask, but it is also a just and honorable one. Minnesota has already taken meaningful steps to recognize the veterans of the Secret War through the Lao Veteran, Ally Veteran license plate, and the designation of May 14th as Hmong Special Guerrilla Units Remembrance Day. These are commendable acts, but they are only the beginning. Today, we ask you and the state of Minnesota to take the next step and go a little further, to grant these warriors and the recognition they have long deserved. People often thank me for my service, but my 27 years in uniform pale in comparison to the sacrifices of men like my father. At just 16 years old, he was recruited to fight a war on behalf of a country he had never known. For 14 long years, he battled and bled alongside his brothers in arms. And what was his reward? No formal recognition, no title, just a simple license plate, which he cherishes with pride and a state holiday. Yet he and others like him do not harbor bitterness. They lost their homeland, they lost their loved ones, they fled with nothing but the clothes on their backs. And yet they carry themselves with dignity and honor because they know that their sacrifices mattered. They fought for freedom, for democracy, and for a cause greater than themselves. These men, these giants, my elders, inspire a new generation, including myself, to follow in their footsteps. Many of us continue to serve our great nation, and some have even paid the ultimate sacrifice. Others have built new lives here, contributing to our communities in profound and meaningful ways. This bill is not just about honoring the past. It is about doing what is right before it is too late. Time is running out. The few remaining warriors are in their twilight years. Passing this bill will finally grant them the title they have earned, the title of veteran. It will not erase their hardships, but it will ensure that their sacrifices are acknowledged, respected, and never forgotten. This is more than just a legislation. This is an act of justice. It is a recognition of duty, honor, and sacrifice. And it is long overdue. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Colonel Yihan. Next is Gene Lee. We have a few more bills, so if you could keep your... Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Yes, Mr. Chair, honorable legislators, members of the committee. I'm Jean Lee, President and Executive Director of Children's Hope International, which does legal advocacy and public policy. R&R Family Centers are our shelters in housing and services. R&R was named after the R&R, military R&R from Hawaii, which is where I was from. I come from a family of veterans who have served in the U.S. Armed Forces since World War I, World War II, and beyond. And I want to thank all you legislators for supporting America's promise to veterans that have been long overdue for over 50 years. This legislation honors veterans who fought for America, our democracy, our people, and saved thousands of lives of those who were overseas. And many of us are alive because of the lives that they had saved. So I want to thank all you veterans for your service, if you haven't been thanked yet. There have been many state and federal officials, former legislators, veterans who have passed away, and others who have supported these efforts over the years. So we want to thank the authors and co-authors for continuing the efforts. And I wish there was some way to posthumously honor the veterans who have passed away, who could have benefited from this legislation. But I want to thank you again for your commitment to America's promise.
Thank you, Ms. Lee. Chair Bliss, I know that you have a DE1 amendment, so if we could move that before we go to member discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'd like to move the DE1, please.
If you want to discuss your DE, explain your DE1.
Yes, I would. So, first off, it's an honor to be in a room with so many heroes, and I thank you so much for your service to the country. One of the things, on a lighter note, you might have noticed I leaned over and spoke to my associate here and kind of chuckled a little bit. And I just, it was not a disrespectful chuckle. It was, I wish I could still fit in my uniform. Trust me, it ain't there anymore. Anyway, Reps Chair and Cha, or Her and Cha, thank you very much for bringing this forward. You know, you brought it to me on the floor. I read through it. I had some issues, and we talked about them, and I wrote a little note there that I would support it if we did this. When I signed on to it, we had a whole bunch of guys signing on to it after me. And I think it's very important that we do recognize the SGUs. We just have to do it in a thoughtful and measured way. And I really think that your willingness to work with me, I think, is important. My DE amendment would strip everything except for the task force, and it would require several people in the task force. I know we talked about it. There's a couple of them that were technically didn't exist ever, and we'll fix that and maybe add a few more. But this is going to be laid over, and I don't, I want to keep working with you on it, and I think it's important. So I am going to pull this amendment, and again, it was just a task force to work with all involved parties to come back to the legislature and give us a recommendation as to how to proceed. That's what my amendment is, and I look forward to working with you on that going forward. So thank you again. Thank you, everybody, for coming.
Thank you, Chair Bliss.
And I do withdraw my amendment.
Chair Bliss withdraws the DE1 amendment. As amended, for any discussions from members? Seeing none, Representative Price.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank you, Representative Cha, and Representative Her for bringing this legislation, and thank everyone for their service who joined us today. This was a really powerful presentation, and my undergraduate was focused on Southeast Asian Studies, and I feel like I learned a lot today, so bad job, University of Madison, or Wisconsin-Madison. But anyway, just wanted to say thank you so much for this important legislation.
Representative Ray Brower.
I just want to take a minute to say thank you to each and every one of you for coming here today. Thank you to each and every one of you for the service that you gave. You need to be honored. You should be honored. We appreciate you. The Hmong people in Laos fought on behalf of the U.S. We need to honor this. Other countries did not have recruits fighting as proxy. You fought as Americans on our behalf. And now over 30,000 passed away. 10,000 came, over 10,000 came here to Minnesota, and only 900 are left. It's past time. This must happen. And just thank you again from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you, Representative Rebauer. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, too, want to say thank you to all the veterans behind me here for your service, for your sacrifices, for what you did for our country, your country now. And thank you for that. And I want to thank Representative Cha for taking the time to meet with me, go through the history, and explain to me the great sacrifices that the Hmong people made during the Vietnam War on behalf of this country, and they deserve that recognition. So thank you for that, Representative Cha, and everybody behind this bill. Appreciate it.
Any further discussion? Okay. Well, first of all, I just want to forgive me if I'm speaking my native language, Agusan Ochotrame, Jakutu Toga, Mitchin, Kamilashiha, Nuno, Totuno. Republican co-chair, Representative Matt Bliss, Noha, Bitsoling Totu Noban, Oko Chanchan McLeod. Thank you so much, Representative Cha and Representative Her, Colonel Yilinghan, Dr. Lee Bosiong, Mr. Yali, Mr. Van Sanvang, for your testimony today. I just shared with community members that I am a son of a veteran who served, and I am also a son of refugee immigrant parents of this country, and as the chair of this committee, as a son of a veteran and grandson of a veteran who served during the Secret War, I'm very proud to be here today to hear the testimonies and be part of this legislation. And so I look forward to working with you, Chair Bliss, and members of the committee to see this bill moving forward. Final remarks, Chair Cha and Representative Her.
Yes, I want to acknowledge the 35 authors that signed on to this bill, but I want to speak more a little bit to my colleagues on the other side of the aisle. Each and every one of you that signed on this bill, all of you, of the 35 signatures, 25 came from your party. And the conversations that we had on the floor in your private offices, I really appreciate the time that you made to listen to my story and to give me the honor to represent your signatures on this bill, that we may work in a bipartisanship to honor those that deserve it. So thank you, Chair Bliss.
Representative Her.
Thank you, Chair Zhang and Chair Bliss, for giving this bill a hearing today. Our Hmong people are a humble people, and I want to just emphasize that I know Colonel Yi Hang spoke today, but he is actually our first Hmong graduate of West Point and our first Hmong colonel, and he is very humble about his own history, but this is how our Hmong people operate, which is why you have all of these SGU soldiers who, despite what they've been through, they love this country and they love what it represents and why they fought for this country. And so I don't want that that point to be missed. I want to also share that our pilot, Yali, showed you his documentation of his proof of his service. But I will say that most of our SGU veterans do not have any documentation. As Dr. Lipaw and I spoke, he said that there were days after the fall of Vietnam that they spent, my father worked at the U.S. Embassy as well, that they spent days burning documents to show that we were not, that America was never present there. And so I share Chair Bliss's sentiment that we must be thoughtful in this process, and we agree with that, but I want us to have faith in the fact that Minnesota would not be the first to honor our veterans. As stated before, Ohio and Wisconsin have already done this, so despite the lack of documentation, despite the efforts we've made at the federal level and many ways in which we've worked with our federal representation to find the documentation to be able to classify our SGUs as veterans, that I think that the will of Minnesotans and the spirit of who we are, that we will find a way forward, and I want to assure all of our members that we have meetings planned with Deputy Commissioner of MDVA to work through the language. Chair Bliss, your DE, I suspect that much of that will actually be included in the task force with just a few tweaks, but I just appreciate the work of this entire committee and the support from everyone, and we are also committed to ensuring that the language works and it is thoughtful. So thank you, committee members, for hearing the bill today.
I will renew my motion, House File 1845, as amended, be laid over. Thank you, Chair Cha and Chair Vang. Next is House File 1511, Representative Clardy. Welcome back to committee, Representative Clardy. Please move your bill and explain your bill.
Should I start?
Please proceed.
Thank you so much again for having me back on this bill. I'm really excited. A lot of you don't know is that I'm a teacher, been teaching for 29 years. So when I had the opportunity to work with this group, I was really excited. It establishes a mentor-mentee relationship with veterans. And I really appreciate the efforts and the outreach that's being done with all the veterans groups to reach our veterans. And I'm just trying to help with some of the outreach because I think it's really important to make sure that our citizens here are actively engaged and recognized. So, and I have a couple testifiers here for you today.
Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record, and you may proceed with your testimony.
Sure. Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Stephen Kent. I am a 25-year-old. That's not true. I apologize. I'm a 25-year U.S. Army veteran and Minnesotan who served this great nation as a colonel and founded Be the Best Foundation, a black veteran-led nonprofit dedicated to transforming the lives of veterans and high-risk youth through mentorship, leadership development, and economic empowerment. Let me begin by saying that we support every bill here, this body, that honors and empowers Minnesota veterans. These are not just bills, they are acknowledgments of service, sacrifice, and solutions. HF 1511 belongs in that family of legislation because it activates veterans to prevent violence before it even starts. This bill is not about exclusion, it's about precision. It targets a population facing disproportionate harm and gives them a fighting chance. That's not identity politics, it's data-driven public safety. When we lift those most at risk, we lift the entire community. Some may ask, why Be the Best Foundation? Because we're already doing the work in schools, alternative education facilities, and neighborhoods others can't reach. Our members are trusted because they walk the walk, and we don't just inspire, we measure. Every outcome is reviewed, every life matters, every dollar is tracked. I was a CFO in the Army, responsible for $26.3 billion. I led the budget department that funded Iraqi freedom and enduring freedom. and I served three tours at the Pentagon. So I understand fiscal responsibility, and I understand leadership. HF 1511 is not charity, it's strategy, it's prevention, and it's patriotism in its purest form, protecting our communities by preparing the next generation to lead them. It's commissioning a mission ready unit, one that sees value in every life and refuses to let potential slip through the cracks. We stand ready to deploy. Let's lead this charge together. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next testifier, please state your name for the record, and you may proceed with your testimony.
He is here for my next bill.
Gotcha.
Or one of the next bills. So.
Any member discussion? Vice Chair Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Clardy, I think that this bill has some merits to it. I'm wondering, why are we sending it to the I get the concept of sending it to the Veterans Military Affairs Division, but the way I'm reading this would do better in the Children, Youth, and Families Committee. There's also a lot more money in that committee. And so I think that, sir, your concept is a very honorable one. I think it's very, very good. We need to have outreach to these underserved populations. I do think that the Children, Youth, and Families Division or committee would have a lot more money available to provide to such a great and wonderful organization that you have, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks for your comment. I'm going to make a comment first, and then I'm going to turn it over to him. Sometimes things there are a lot of things that you don't want to see in public, but I've been on the Veterans and Military Committee for two terms now. And I am bringing this purposely to this committee because when I look at people that are up here, except for the last group, there hasn't been much diversity. And I think that I wanted to take the charge of helping do some outreach with the military. I do not have a military background, but I do know that there doesn't appear to be as much engagement as I'd like to see. So this was a very intentional process to bring it here. Also, the people that they're partnering with are, and I don't know the terms, and you can help with this, have specialties in military, and so they're introducing these young people to the military and the different opportunities within it. And I'm going to turn it over to you, the chair first, and then my testifier to go into it a little further. Great question.
Mr. Kent.
Okay, sure. Thank you. I will tell you that we at Be the Best Foundation are 71% senior black veteran led. We have two colonels, myself and my brother, and we have three sergeant majors. We have done this for a lifetime. It seems, not a lifetime, but it seems like all of us had over 25 years of experience in the military. We know how to lead. We know how to direct. We are black. We understand. We culturally connect with this population. So I think here's an opportunity to have us help our own, because I was that little black boy, the high-risk kid growing up in the ghettos of Mississippi. Divorced parents, dad didn't pay child support. He left us, mom, with four boys. I've come from that background. And to make it myself, it helps me when I talk. It helps me cope with it myself as I give back and help other kids in my same predicament. So I win and they win. I'm that beacon of hope that they can see, that they can relate to. If Kent made it out, then I can make it out. And I don't give no shortcuts, no excuses. You got to figure it out and do your part. And we hold kids accountable. And we hear your story. Now let's get to work. And I think bringing it here, not that we can't bring it there, I like the money aspect of the resources, but bringing it here as veterans led, it shows that we are involved ourselves and we care and we are not punting to the next committee. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Trent. Vice Chair Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for the answer. I appreciate that. I do think that so we have such a less amount of funds in this. If it was in children and youth and families, which I sit on as well, that's where I could really get behind the concept of this. I think what you do is an incredibly honorable thing to serve again. You served for a long time, and now you're serving our youth again. I appreciate that. And to the concept, you know, what you were saying, Representative Clardy, the amount of diversity in the United States military is something that is significantly higher than the regular population of the United States. You know, where I come from, I had to join the Army to see that there were people outside of the same as me, because the diversity in my community is such a different disparity from where what the Army is. So I appreciate you bringing it forward. I think that we really should be spending children, youth, and family dollars on this. I think that, like I said, they have significantly more excess funds that they could use. And so I would just recommend that we do it that way.
Well, Bill Walter, did you want to consider that and make a motion to send over there or speak with
I do not want to consider that, and I'll tell you why. But thank you for bringing that forward. If we do that, then we should go back and look at all the bills that have been presented and see if they would, you know, get funding from legacy or if they get funding from bonding. And I think that this is a real issue that was brought to me by my community, and I think it should be honored. I do understand what the budget looks like this year, and everything is scalable, but to say no, I don't feel like that's an option, but I appreciate your input.
Any follow-up or further discussion on the bill? Representative Feist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Clardy, for bringing this bill. I do think that this is a good committee for this bill because, you know, the benefit is to young people and public safety, but it's also to the veterans. You know, we heard from Meals on Wheels that oftentimes they're the only person that a veteran might see in a day. And building connections is really important for mental well-being. We talk a lot in this committee about suicide prevention, and programs like this connect veterans to the community, and I think that really benefits the veterans as much as it does the youth. And I also just, you know, as like I'm so passionate about investing in youth as a way to protect public safety. And, you know, a lot of the juvenile justice funding and investments has migrated to children and families. But I see, you know, that those investments aren't coming out of the public safety budget anymore. And so we need to find places where we can invest in these types of interventions and mentorships, because like the data is really clear that they do enhance public safety and change lives. And it is much more affordable to do it this way than it is to incarcerate people or like undo or address like a lot of harm that people can do. So I just really support this bill and I'm glad that you brought it. Thank you.
Any further discussions? Closing remarks, Representative Clardy.
Just one thing. I really appreciate the opportunity to present this, but I also kind of wonder how my trajectory would have been different in life had I known about all the specialized jobs or opportunities within the military, if someone had sat down to me with me. I did know that, you know, my father and uncles, they were in the military, but we talked about some of the opportunities, but a program like this opens the can and just shows like a lot of the opportunities that are available. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Clardy. You renew your motion that House File 1511 be laid over for possible inclusion. Next is House File 1514, another Representative Clardy bill. And you will move that our bill be in front of the committee to your bill, Representative Clardy. To your bill, Representative Clardy.
Yes, thank you. So some of you that were on the committee before have seen this before, and I am really excited that Representative Olson has talked about the importance of making sure our military veterans have access to mental health care and that we do something about suicide. So this program that, or this plan that I bring in front of you addresses many of those things with officers and military people that are working through PTSD. So with that, I would like to turn it back to you, Chair, so you can call on my testifiers.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, and you may proceed with your testimony.
My name is Eric Wickheiser, and I am a Navy vet. Thank you so much, Representative Jung and Bliss. Really appreciate having us before this committee, and really appreciate all the work that this committee has done over the years. It's very near and dear to my heart. I've been chair for 6 years of Veteran Resilience Project. We're just coming up on celebrating 10 years of service to veterans this year. We've got a very dedicated staff that reaches throughout Minnesota, very proud for that. We've got therapists throughout Minnesota. The a little bit nervous here, sorry. I'd like to introduce Major Jonna Phillips, who is our executive director, and she will take it from here. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, and you may proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Jonna Phillips, and good morning to you all. I am, as Eric stated, the executive director of Veteran Resilience Project. I oversee the therapy program and our outreach program. I'm also a licensed therapist, a combat veteran spouse, and a currently serving member of the Minnesota National Guard with 25 years of service. I can tell you that the hardest days of my service have been when I've attended a funeral of a fellow service member lost to suicide. Unfortunately, I had that experience just yesterday. This is why I continue to show up and advocate for effective and accessible mental health care for military members. Due to consistent legislative support, VRP has served over 119 veterans, service members, and spouses approved through the MDBA grant to receive EMDR therapy. I would like to include that VRP uses other funding to serve veterans of all discharge statuses and currently serving Minnesota National Guard members that live in other states such as Wisconsin. In 2024, 76% of our clients were veterans, 12% were service members, and 10% were spouses. And so far in 2025, 60% are veterans, 28% are service members, which is a barrier in of itself because many are worried about documentation and having it on their records. So that 28% is significant to us, and 10% are spouses. Upon intake, 26% of our clients report suicidal ideation, 20% report previous suicide attempts, and over 30% report military sexual trauma, MST, and out of our female clients, it's 80%. This year, we have started tracking postvention, which is around the idea of after there has been a death of suicide and the care for those individuals. Currently, we are seeing 60% have lost a service member due to death by suicide of those that we are serving, and 80% have not received any mental health support until accessing our services. Thus, we have provided over 1,000 EMDR sessions this year. Since my last testimony with all of you, we have updated our website to provide further education on EMDR and allow individuals to sign up easily to start our program. We've expanded our services to rural Minnesota. We've hired a care coordinator, which has been critical, and she is able to provide one-on-one support to our clients and tracks outcomes. I will be sharing more with you today. As we move forward with appropriated funds for this fiscal year, we are projected to use just over $400,000 via this grant or legislative appropriation. Sustaining our funding at this level is critical to the mental health of Minnesota's military community.
Our service is vital trauma care to include PTS, PTSD, moral injury, and MST, military sexual trauma. With consistent funding, we can maintain key positions that directly impact the quality and accessible of care that we are providing. Again, our care coordinator and our outreach coordinators are crucial to educating, building partnerships, sharing resources, connecting clients to therapy, ensuring the ongoing support. One note I would like to make is sometimes we have a client who reaches out to us, but they don't actually start the therapy for 6 months, maybe even a year. We really pride ourselves on pacing with the client and staying in touch with them. And when they're ready, we're ready as well. Moreover, given the current uncertainty surrounding other federally funded programs, sustaining state-level funding for BRP is more important than ever. BRP has become a reliable, accessible resource for Minnesota veterans. State funding allows us to continue to offer trauma-focused therapies like EMDR without interruption. We continue to require our EMDR therapists to attend an advanced military training to be able to join our network. We now have over 60 EMDR therapists statewide. We can refer to both in-person and telehealth, and again, located throughout the state, including rural Minnesota. We have attended over 100 events this last year, reaching over 12,000 community members, including things like the State Fair, reintegration events, MACV events, collaborations with businesses that employ veterans, such as Minnesota Power, Minnesota National Guard, CBSOs, U.S. Steel, and more. Our team actively participates in suicide prevention coalitions and VA community partnership coalitions, furthering our partnerships so we can ensure clients have access to other community resources as well. We also were featured on Care 11, Almanac North, and Fox 21. Again, we hired our care coordinator. She's a licensed social worker, and her role has been instrumental in connecting clients to the therapy network. On average, we're able to start our clients, once they've submitted all the required paperwork, in therapy within 2 to 4 weeks. And if you know anything about the mental health world right now, that's a significant statistic. In my previous private practice, I typically had between a 3 and 4 month wait list. And that's really not that uncommon. She ensures there's ongoing support throughout the process. And then in terms of outcomes, which is, I know, a very significant data point, our work has produced notable results. 100% of our clients have a reduction in their PTSD symptoms. Through our pre and post assessments, our clients are reporting a 57% reduction in their depression symptoms, a 57% reduction of their anxiety symptoms, and a 58% reduction in their PTSD symptoms. These improvements are a direct result of using evidence-based therapy and making it accessible. We are making significant progress, but the work ahead is crucial to sustain and build on the success. To maintain our strong foundation, we seek continued support of the Minnesota Legislature. The funding we receive from the legislature is vital to continue to provide free trauma therapy to our Minnesota military community. Thank you.
Thank you. Member questions? Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the testimony. I'm curious. I was going to ask you about the effectiveness in your data toward that. I do have a couple of questions, Mr. Chair, if I could. So first of all, your report for 2024 doesn't state how many veterans you serve, but it says 715 sessions. How many veterans did you serve in 2024?
Yeah, that was 119 through this grant. Oh, sorry.
You may proceed.
Okay. It was 119 through this grant. We've served more throughout that are, it's not directly through this appropriation, but that's about 140.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. So I'm just curious, because as a former teacher, I also tried various strategies to improve, say, reading or math skills and so on. And with that number of veterans served, How does your improvement rate compare to traditional mental health services? And then does it, with that small of a number, are you really able to say, oh, this is better than traditional? Because it is a very small number of a study, if you might say.
Ms. Phillips.
Yes. So why we even, you know, talk about EMDR and the effectiveness is not just our research. There's a lot of significant research out there on the national level. Actually, it's one of the top recommended therapies through the VA because of the research. It's EMDR, cognitive behavioral therapy, and prolonged exposure therapy. However, this one specifically is not readily accessible at the VA. And we also believe in having military members, veterans, and spouses having access in their local communities and not just having to go to the VA. Last I knew at the VA, it was a 6-month wait list to see somebody with EMDR therapy. But yes, this is a smaller study for research, and we're getting more and more data as far as that's concerned. But there's, if you go to the EMDR website, there's probably over 50 studies documenting the effectiveness of this, specifically with PTSD and combat veterans.
Representative Bennett.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. If I could do one more quick follow-up, maybe comment. So you really don't have comparison, though, of your improvement compared to traditional veterans improvement, because a lot of veterans get mental health care. Does the EMDR show, I know the national studies show it benefits, but are you showing a different trajectory of improvement than the traditional mental health services that, say, the VA offers?
Well, our niche is EMDR, so we're not doing other modalities within Veteran Resilience Project. The data we have to compare, again, is at the national level and other research that has already been done. And that's where you're going to see the comparative of it's more effective and less invasive and a shorter amount of time. On average, our clients are completing therapy in 14 sessions, which is also a significant point.
Representative Bennett.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And thank you. I won't ask any more, but I would like to see if that's something you could forward. I am guessing that traditional mental health approaches that the VA or other organizations use, that they're tracking their data, too, on how many sessions it takes before, say, the client graduates or whatever that word is, compared to yours. That's what I would like to see as your own comparison, not nationally, but we don't have to keep going, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
We have a testifier online, so Mr. Thompson, if you could state your name for the record and be brief, because we do have another bill to get through. Mr. Thompson.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Thank you. My name is John Thompson. I am a military veteran, served for 34 years, active duty in the Marine Corps, 10 years, an additional 24 years with the Army National Guard in Minnesota. I'm also a licensed professional counselor in Minnesota. I'm EMDR trained and certified, and I am one of VRP's therapists. To me, I was asked to speak about the importance of VRP for the Minnesota military community. It is super important. That's the best way I can describe it. And it's all about access. Jonna had mentioned earlier, the wait times at the VA are significant. I also work in a major mental health organization within Minnesota. Our wait times are significant as well. I'm also a patient. I have my own PTSD diagnosis, and I went through therapy at the VA. Unfortunately for me, EMDR was not offered. I used a modality called cognitive processing, and it was effective for me, but it was very time-consuming. It was very invasive, and I still feel that there's unresolved trauma-related issues that I'm experiencing, and I'm going to continue to experience, but I'm working through that. as we speak. The access is the most critical piece of it. As you said, once we're put in touch with the organization that is VRP, once we are made aware that there's a veteran, a service member, a spouse in need, getting them matched up with a provider is a very quick and seamless process. I currently am working with three VRP clients in addition to many veteran clients that I have through my regular job. And the differences in the access times is pretty significant, I would say. As far as the services that VRP provides, witnessing the improvements in person with these clients is profound. I know that we've been talking a lot about like national studies, but there is very solid data that's available through those national studies. And it's comparative, I would imagine, if you look at Minnesota-specific client outcomes. It's been demonstrated to have moderate to strong effect in improving quality of life, reducing anxiety, depression, and other PTSD-related symptoms among the client base. Some of the other issues, the backdrop in here with when you talk about military sexual trauma, military veteran and family suicides, we often hear it said like one is too many when it comes to sexual assaults or military suicides, and I'm a firm believer in that. So anything that we can do as citizens of Minnesota, as the representatives of those citizens, to improve access to mental health care for our veterans is something that we should be invested in. Thank you for the opportunity to
Thank
testify.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Chair Bliss, any further discussion on the bill? Vice Chair Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we've had this conversation a couple times in this committee, and I was looking at your 990 or a 501c3, so you have to report that every year. From my understanding, you had about $400,000 worth of contributions last year, which is what the state of Minnesota gave you. As a nonprofit charitable organization, are you currently fundraising outside? My question would then be, if all you're getting is the $400,000 from the state of Minnesota, why don't we just direct those funds to the Minnesota Veterans Association and have them do the job that you're trying to do?
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Olson. Yes, great question. We are receiving funding from other organizations. We received a Medica grant, a Centra grant, a Southern Minnesota grant. We are being supported by Duke Cannon. Support for the troops. Minnesota Power is having us be their nonprofit for their golf scrambler and are projected already to have raised $62,000. So a lot of this money, again, helps us cover veterans that aren't, may have other than honorable discharges, or again, those that are serving the Minnesota National Guard but live out of state, and then other operating expenses as well. And in addition to that, we are supported by many legions and VFWs, and also see them as a significant referral resource.
Vice Chair Olson. Okay, so closing remarks, Representative Clardy.
Again, thanks for hearing the bill. And as we know, one size doesn't fit all. So as you look at putting together a bill, please consider different aspects of which bills are actually addressing mental health. Thank you.
Thank you for testifying. Representative Clardy will renew her motion at 1514 8 over for possible inclusion. The last and final bill in the committee is House File 1516. Representative Clardy will move the bill being from the committee to your bill, Representative Clardy.
You've been so patient today. I'm going to make this really short and probably pretty much turn it over to the testifiers. But again, just another initiative coming out of the community. And Chair, I would like to turn it to you so you can call in the testifiers.
Welcome back to the committee. Please state your names for the record. You may proceed with your testimony.
My name is Dr. Sean Payton. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak before you today. My name is Dr. Sean Payton. I am a former officer of United States Air Force, having served during the Gulf War, and I later dedicated my career to psychology and education as an instructor at a community college. I'm before you today not only as a veteran, but as someone who has closely with those who have worn uniform and now face challenges that should not be theirs to carry alone. Bill 1516 is a critical step in ensuring that all veterans in Minnesota receive support they need, particularly Black veterans, who often encounter systemic barriers to resources, health care, housing, economic opportunities, and this includes suicide prevention and solutions to homelessness. This bill is about ensuring that Black veterans have access to the tools necessary to compete, achieve, and succeed on the basis of merit. As someone who has earned a PhD, I understand firsthand the value of merit-based success, and I want to ensure that my fellow veterans have the opportunity to rise based on their own skills, perseverance, and dedication. This program will provide critical support, mental health care, job training, home ownership assistance, and educational development so that veterans can build self-sufficient, advance their careers, and contribute meaningfully to their communities. Supporting this bill means recognizing that service and struggles of Black veterans and taking tangible steps to ensure their well-being. The Be the Best Foundation, with this leadership, consists of 71% Black veterans who serve in senior positions and uniquely positioned to execute this mission effectively and with cultural competence. It's about empowering veterans to succeed on their own merit by removing unnecessary barriers that stand in their way. I urge this committee to move forward with Bill 1516, not just as a policy decision, but as a commitment to the veterans who have given so much to our nation. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Payton. Next testifier, please state your name again for the record, and you may proceed.
Sure, thank you. Again, my name is Stephen Kent, 25-year Army veteran. Today, we're here to talk about, today, we're here to talk about brave American veterans who have served our country, often facing discrimination along the way. These men and women have fought in every major conflict, showing incredible courage and dedication, even when their own country did not always treat them fairly. From the Revolutionary War to today, they've been on the front lines, risking their lives for freedoms we all enjoy. Yet when we came home, we often faced segregation, unequal benefits, and fewer opportunities. For example, Joseph Cochran, who wasn't able to make it here today, is a Vietnam veteran who fought bravely in Vietnam. He served for two tours, received a Silver Star and a Purple Heart, and was wounded in battle, of course, the Purple Heart. Despite his dedication and sacrifices, he was paid 30% less than white soldiers and faced discrimination when trying to climb the ranks. The challenges faced by African-American veterans are not new. I've lived them. During the Civil War, slave owners would sell their slaves for enlistment in the military, showing a disregard for their humanity. The generational trauma of Black soldiers in this country runs deep, affecting families and communities for decades. We are here today because we must find a way to deal with systemic trauma that Black soldiers have endured. It is our responsibility to address these injustices and ensure that all veterans receive the respect and support we deserve. Despite these challenges, African-American veterans have continued to push for justice and equality. Our strength and determination have helped pave the way for a better future for all of us. As we honor these veterans today, let's remember their sacrifices and work to correct the injustices that we faced. We owe it to them to ensure that everyone who serves is respected, treated with dignity, and valued by our nation they protect. And the last thing I will tell you, as a veteran, as a Black veteran, as a senior Black veteran, when I'm out here working with youth or working with other veterans, it does my heart good. It helps me when I help others. For anyone who works inside of a charity, when you give, it does something for you. And so that's what we're trying to do. Help us help us. And when I'm helping, it's therapeutic for me also. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kemp, for your testimony. Member discussion, Vice Chair Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's Clardy's Day in Veterans today, so appreciate you being here today to celebrate your day. Got a real quick question here. So I was looking at the numbers, and I'm seeing $4.7 million have been appropriated, but it's asking for $5 million. So curious where the extra $300,000 is going. And then on top of that, I'm curious, most of these things that we're identifying are things that are already benefits that are provided to veterans. So $700,000 for homeownership assistance. The VA provides significant housing assistance to soldiers buying homes. You've got job training. You've got educational support. Soldiers, veterans receive copious sums of money in education benefits, job training. There are a number of other nonprofits that provide these to veterans who have overused or didn't receive any of those benefits. So I'm curious, first, where that $300,000 is and where it's supposed to go, but then also tell me how this is different than what we already provide. Because if we're already doing this, I don't know if we need to spend more, but if we're not doing something that we should be doing, that's where the question is, and I'm just not convinced that we – so please convince me, because I believe the story about the Vietnam veteran, there was significant barriers to soldiers, minority soldiers especially in the Vietnam era. But I'm curious today, because from where I stand in my foxhole, I'm not seeing that.
Representative Clardy.
Yeah, thank you. This is a great conversation. I should have been more diligent on the financial piece, so I appreciate that. Tough conversations to have. I really would look forward to maybe working with you and making this a really good, solid bill, because I think there is some merit on that. And were there pieces that overlap, I have no problem with taking those out of the bill, but I also want to see what this can bring in. So would you be open to that?
Vice Chair Olson.
Well, open. I mean, I'm always open to ensuring that our veterans and our soldiers have the best possible outcome that we can have. So the only question is that I have is I'm just not convinced that this pushes the marker forward where we want it to be, or it doesn't have the benefits that we really, really want.
Chair, may I speak? Yes, sir. So the research shows that although we're helping our vets, the homeless vets, black veterans are four times more likely to be homeless. So in answering your question, it is true that we're addressing the homelessness of vets, but African-American vets are four times more likely to be homeless. Let's move on. One more statistic. It is true that 40 to 44% of the vets take their lives every day. Of that number, the statistics show black veterans do not get access to mental health. Those are the numbers, straight numbers. Yes, it is true. So, and I'm passionate about this to the point where that's why I became a psychologist. Many times when African Americans go into a facility, they don't see anyone that look like themselves. Where I work right now, I am the only African-American male psychologist there right now. The argument that those that come to me, their argument is, I don't want to go into a place where all I see is white women with blonde hair and blue eyes. Those are the words that they've shared with me personally. So yes, it is true that monies are being disseminated. However, if we look at four times more homelessness for African Americans, if we look at the suicide rates of African American males specifically, but males in general, the numbers don't add up. We do need to do more. Thank you.
Vice Chair Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I share that passion for our soldiers and our veterans too. So I wasn't thinking you were, you know, coming at me or anything, because we're on the same team here. I really appreciate the conversation, and we'll look forward to much more conversation on this issue, and especially how we can deal with that soldier suicide issue that you kind of brought up as well.
Representative Duran, and then Representative Rayrow, and then we're going to have a close out. So Representative Duran.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry. Thank you guys for coming here. What I would like to just ask you guys a little bit about, like, what's going to make you, I guess, different than what we have been going here. If you can explain that just a little bit more about what the services that are provided right now, and kind of help me understand a little bit more of what you guys are going to be doing above and beyond what is actually offered. Because, you know, me being a veteran myself and actually having some Black veteran friends myself and knowing the services and everything that they've gotten before have all been the same exact stuff that I've gotten. So I'm a little confused on the services, I guess, aspect of things, and making sure that they're you know, if there's a lack in services that are being offered to certain people, that's an issue. We need to address that for sure, 100%. You know, we'll all be with you on that. But that's not the information that I'm receiving, you know, being inside as well. And again, from that, I just want you guys to kind of explain to me a little bit more about what that is and what you guys are looking at doing here.
Representative Rand, just because you're not experienced, it does not mean it does not exist. So, Mr. Ken, if you could be brief and respond, and we're going to have to go to Representative Rayrow. We are out of time, so.
Sure, I'll defer to the psychologist first, and if there's time left, then I'll take any from that.
Dr.
Did you want to talk first?
Yes, please. So, right, there has been lawsuits against the VA because of the disparities between minorities and Blacks to their counters. So, as I shared with you, and I want to be as respectful as possible, when you walk into a facility and you're doing the same things that your brothers in arms is doing, but they get the services and you don't, it crushes you. The research shows that there's a disparity right now, that there's a disparity between veterans as a whole and African Americans in terms of services. We all know that the veterans aren't getting the services at the VA as they need to, and we've been working on that. With that being said, African Americans specifically, there is a disparity in terms of the services they get to what their brethren are getting. Chair, thank you.
Mr. Kent.
15 seconds. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm with you. The VA is offering a lot of great things. I am a recipient of VA benefits, no doubt. But elder Black veterans who aren't tech savvy, who aren't modern, they are reluctant to go to VA or go to people who don't look like them, because they, for so long, for so many years, gotten the cold shoulder. I know my uncle was in Vietnam, my dad was in Vietnam, and many of the older generation Black veterans, like, don't trust the system. I trust the system. It's working for me. But what about those Black veterans whose shoulders I stood on, who don't trust the system, and it's not working for them? My colleague talked about 40 to 44% of veterans commit suicide. I think he meant 40 to 44 veterans commit suicide per day, not 40 to 44% of veterans commit suicide. Not, so I just want to, since we're recording this and on the record, he didn't mean 40 to 44%. Of veterans commit suicide every day. It's 40 to 44 veterans commit suicide per day. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ray Brower.
I was trying to write down my thoughts so I could be quick. I think it really comes down to the old thing that we were taught when we were younger as a white person, that we should not see color. The problem is, if we don't see color, then we're missing who isn't in the room, who isn't feeling included. And so we actually have to be intentional about seeing color and making sure that we are being inclusive in our services. Thank you.
Representative Clark, closing remarks.
It's going to take about 10 minutes, but these are tough conversations. These are real conversations. It's a beginning of a conversation. My question is, you know, if not here, then where?
And if not now, then when? And I would love to take this offline with anyone and kind of get some ideas to enrich the bill and to make some things happen. So I'm available. I hope you're available. They're available. Yes, so ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Tardy. You renew your motion that House File 1514 be laid over. Thank you, Representative Tardy, and to your testifiers for being here. We are adjourned.